Okay, I know we are coming into back to school life for all of us with children out there, and I am all about something that makes your life easier or your life as a parent easier or helps kids get their vitamins or their nutrients easier. So let me tell you about something today called Little Critters. So it's back to school time, and this is one of my secrets for back to school. And between backpack browsing and outfit arranging, there is a drama-free way to make vitamins part of your kids' morning routines. And that is Little Critters Gummy Vitamins. So my kids think they're eating fun, delicious gummy bears, all while they're actually getting their essential nutrients for their health and development. I will never tell them that part. Little Critters is a pediatrician recommended kids multivitamin gummy brand and a super yummy way to start the school year. So if you guys want to find an easier way to get kids their vitamins starting this school year, because we already have a million other things to worry about, shop now. As most of y'all know, I'm a mom to three young kids, and I know a lot of you guys are too. And the one thing we all use is diapers. That's why I want to tell you about how great Pampers Cruisers 360 is. Pampers Cruisers 360 is a must-have baby-proof diaper for your wild child. I don't know about your children, but Sunday, who is now two, has figured out how to strap on and off her own diaper, but Pampers Cruisers 360 will fix that problem. Unlike ordinary taped diapers where babies can rip off the tape or the tabs, Cruisers 360 is tape-free and hence removal-proof and baby-proof. It has a 360-degree stretchy waistband that simply slides right on. Pampers Cruisers 360 keeps up with your wild child with up to a 100% leak-proof, gap-free fit. No matter how your baby moves, it's the ultimate baby-proof. Try Pampers Cruisers 360 with the new Pampers Free and Gentle Wipes for healthy baby skin. They're made from 100% plant-based cloth that grips the mess, with Free and Gentle mess meets its match. Add Pampers Cruisers 360 and Free and Gentle Wipes to your cart or pick them up at your local grocery or big box store. For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Hey y'all, this is Mallory Irvin, and it's time for all of us to live fully. It's so important in this crazy world of ours that we stay connected, inspired, and motivated to be and do our best. And that's not always easy. I'm here with my guests and friends to share the stories and lessons we've learned to help you live your best life every day and truly begin living fully. Let's make it happen and get started with today's episode. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Living Fully. Ask and you shall receive. So my most popular episode to date of the entire podcast is the podcast with none other than my dad, Gary Irvin, who happens to be sitting with me at my dining room table right now. So we wanted to do a follow-up episode because I got more requests for a follow-up episode from this episode than I did any of the other episodes. Tens of thousands of people have listened to this episode, have tweeted things and Instagrammed things and Facebooked things, and it just really connected with people. It's so funny because my dad, just being the humble just guy that he is, I was like talking to him about the podcast and some guests that I wanted to have on and how, you know, we thought that they would connect to this type of person in this type of episode. And he was like, well, how do you think they connect to a 60-something-year-old man climbing mountains? I was like, you know, that's a good point.
I think I said 60-something, gray-haired with a big belly.
Something like that. That was really cool that that was my most listened to episode, and I'm really excited today to have my dad again. And if this is the first episode that you guys are listening to, you should go back to episode 3. We did an episode and it was called How Defining Your Summit. It was about defining your summit. Also, just a little backstory on my dad, really quickly in a nutshell, my dad at 60-ish decided he wanted to summit all 7 of the tallest summits. It's the tallest summit of the mountain in each continent. So he has done 5 as of now, I believe.
Right. I go for my 6th one tomorrow.
So he leaves tomorrow to head to the other side of the world. And so I just wanted to get another one of these in because there were so many lessons that you guys really resonated with. And he had just a million more. So we've got 7 lessons today. that all relate back to his mountain climbing journeys. He's now summited Mount Everest and multiple mountains, and he's just got these amazing stories and life lessons. So the reason kind of behind why he started writing these lessons was I was pregnant with my son Ford when he started climbing the mountains, and he started writing these lessons to his grandkids. And that's kind of where these originated from. But the first point in today's podcast and thing that we're actually going to talk about, and it has to do with why he started doing these lessons in the first place, is before you figure out the how, so in my dad's instance, before he figured out how to climb the dang mountain, you have to figure out the why. And I think that's such a poignant thing, and I think it's an amazing thing to start out with. So my dad, in his quest to find the why of why he was doing this, because he had to explain why he was doing it to a lot of people back home that were like, you got to stop doing this. So we were just talking about that on the couch, and I want to have my dad just touch on that a little bit and how it kind of just relates to everything in life, that maybe you're looking at a how in the heck am I going to do this, whatever it is that's in front of you in your life, how you really have to determine that why. So I'm going to turn it over to my dad, and he's going to tell you the story behind that. We're going to talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, it kind of started in, I started this kind of journey. It's been just 2014. One of the things is I knew climbing these mountains really called to me. It was something that gave me great happiness and something that also was fairly painful. And people would ask me when I get back, why are you doing that? Why do you put your body through that? And you know, the trips to South America, what I did is every 3 or 4 days when I would write something in my journal, I would have two lists. And one list would be the why I did it, what I saw that 3 days that were beautiful or meant something to me, and then the why not. Why not do it? And at the end of my trip, I made two trips to South America to climb Aconcagua, a 23,000-foot mountain. And, you know, it was in early stages of climbing these big peaks. I had to prove to myself why I was doing it. Not really prove to myself. I had to understand the why. And once you understand the why, then you know how. And, you know, that's a metaphor, I guess, what you're saying with life. You know, how am I going to run a 5K? You know, you got to determine why you want to do it. How am I going to quit smoking? You need to determine why. And you know, there's a lot of things. And my whys were, you know, the obvious ones, that the physical challenge, what it does for me mentally and physically. But it's also things like God gave me this body at this age that I can withstand the mountain. And it's a sin if I didn't continue, if I didn't do it. And, you know, those are things that you kind of, like I was talking about in Everest, after in a tent with nothing but your thoughts, you really understand and you look deeper at why you're doing things. And, you know, I think people a lot of times do things on an impulse, or someone tells them that this is the thing to do. This will make you happy. And I think in order to understand how you're going to do something, you need to understand why you're doing it. You're doing it for the right reason.
Yeah. It's such an amazing point, and one that we didn't really talk about last time, and one that, like, now that this podcast is rolling and I'm hearing feedback, I think so many people, they forget to figure out that why. They don't know to figure out that why in the beginning. And I've actually, like, been reading a lot of books and listening to a lot of other podcasts and going to, you know, these seminars with these gurus and self-help people. And so many people talk about, like, how when you attach an emotion to something, how it's just unbelievable the way that it sticks and the way that you're able to, you know, withstand whatever it is that you're going to run into. I think it was one that I was recently at, and they said, think about what you were doing on September 11th, you know, the year that the Trade Towers collapsed. Of course you can remember exactly where you were, exactly what you were wearing, exactly what you were doing. But what were you doing September 11th last year? Like, when you have, you know, emotion attached to something. So say, I'm going to quit smoking, or I'm going to clean up my diet and live a healthy lifestyle because it's a bad example for my grandkids, or because I won't be around for my grandkids. That's totally different than, well, I got to get healthy because the doctor said, or because that's good for you. Those are the people that
they're going to quit before they get to the end.
Or I want to look better. Or, you know, something that's totally, you know, is totally visual. And you could feel better about yourself. That's important. But what other people think of you is the least important of why you do things.
Yeah. I love that lesson. And I love it. And I've been, like, since my dad and I started talking about the lessons that we wanted to continue this podcast on, I've been thinking about that one a lot. Because a lot of times you just jump into the, this is my next goal, and you forget to really think about the why. You think that the why will come, like, as you're figuring it out or as you're already on the journey. But I think that's a great lesson, and one that's really applicable to life, is figure out that why.
And the trick that I used was write it down. I had two columns, why and why not. I put a big list together, and then I wrote it over a two-month period.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, you know, it was crystal clear why I did it. And had I not wrote it down and I just had thoughts and wrote the positives and negatives down, and I would have never probably seen it in total and what the two-month process taught me as far as what the whys way outweighed the why nots.
Yeah. So documenting it and, like, really being intentional and thinking about that. I think that's a great one. Okay, so moving on to this lesson that we're going to talk about, I like it when he starts out with a story, because each of these lessons that he wrote down, something happened on his climbs that prompted him to write this lesson or this story. And this one happened on Mount Everest. It's lesson number 8. And it's the lesson that originated from when you fell into the crevice.
Mm-hmm.
So that lesson, tell the story first before we kind of talk about, like, falling into a crevice. It's so metaphorical with, like, life in general. So many people, you don't expect to fall into something, but you do. And the lesson that came out of that is a really amazing one, and I want to really start out with that one today. So,
okay. It's like what you were talking about. Where were you in 9/11? I remember exactly every detail of something, because it was a shock to my system. But I was in the ice falls, and it's a real fractured area of the mountain between Camp 1 and base camp. It's full of crevices, and you'll have a crack, and it would be 200 to 300 foot deep. And I think I was on my way down, and I had a safety line that went, usually there will either be a ladder across the crevice, or if they're less than 4 or 5 foot, you just jump across. You take a running hop and you jump across them. And you're typically got a carabiner on a safety line that spans that crevice. And, you know, my lesson was, don't look at how deep the crevice is. Look how far you got to jump to get to the other side. It's not important how deep it is. You're gonna die if you fall in it.
Yeah.
And what's important is to focus on what you've got to do to get to the other side. Well, like I said, I was tired. I pulled the safety line. I clipped onto a safety rope. And I had it in my hand, and it was probably a little bit further than my ability to jump, but it was maybe 4 or 5 feet. And so I pulled the slack across, and I was going to jump. And as I jumped, I was going to pull the rope and glide over to the other side. And just in a lapse of thought, the slack in the rope that I pulled across, I was clipped to, tied around my foot. And when I went to jump, my foot caught, and I fell right straight face first into the crevice. I caught the wall of the other side, and I was sat there 200 feet below me, dangling off of the safety line. And, you know, I had gone through training on how they call it slipping into the groove and how to get out, but I was just in such shock and worried about that small piece of rope that was tied to my harness that was holding me to the safety line. Mm-hmm. And that had been up there for months, and how strong it was. And luckily, I was climbing with a Sherpa. And magically, I don't know how he did it, he got to the other side of the crevice, and he was able to drop a rope in, hook to my harness, and drag me out of it. So I had help. But I guess the lesson is I may have been focusing too much on how deep. It's a long way down, instead of how far I got to jump. And I was careless with my rope and tangled up and fell right into it. So I guess the message is two things. One is focus on the important things. The important thing was for me to clearly get across that crevice. And then the second thing is sometimes we all need help.
Yeah.
I had a Sherpa there that was able to snatch me out of that crack into a bad situation. No telling how long I would have had to hang there before someone came by and helped me out of it. Or if I'd have been able to get a prussic safety piece and climb my own way out. The fact that I had help made it a lot easier for me to get out of that crevice. And, you know, we all fall into crevices from time to time, and we all need help getting out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, like, yours was an actual crevice that could have, like, taken your life. I feel like so many, like, crevices that people fall into that you don't expect. You know, a mom that feels like she's let her child down, you can just wallow in that and think, oh my gosh, you know, what's this going to do in the future and all that stuff. Or you can just think, how can I recover from this? How can I get to the other side and keep moving forward? Or, you know, the person that's in debt that doesn't know how to get out and they feel like it consumes them and it inhibits them, like, making decisions. They feel like they're in a dead-end job or whatever it is that they're making decisions in their every area and aspect of their lives because of that. Or like a person that's just gotten out of a relationship that has to start over. You know, I've heard so many comments and had so many people messaging me lately, listening to these podcasts, and these are the types of things that I'm hearing. And like crevices, that's why I really wanted to talk about that today, because I think so many people fall into crevices. And I love what you just said. Like, you don't expect to fall in the crevice.
No, you focus on the negative or what the bad outcomes can be. And that's what happened in this case. Instead of me focusing on keeping my rope clear and getting a good foot and a good jump across, that would have been the easiest solution. But sometimes you look at how deep the crevice is instead of how far across. And that's what I did. That's a mistake I made.
Yeah. In my last episode that went live last Monday, I was just talking about how a lot of people, I feel like, they look to the wrong help to help them out of a crevice or to help them toward a goal or whatever. You had a trained Sherpa that you had interviewed before that you knew at your age climbing the mountains that you needed a person that was so knowledgeable in this in case something like this happened. And it's another lesson that when you choose the people that you're going to listen to, whether you're coming out of something or through something or just like need some guidance towards something, how you should choose the right people to help you out of something, because a lot of people can keep you in the crevice.
Right.
Like, I feel like some people, misery loves company, and some people, you know, they want to wallow in the, well, I'm down here, and they'll find that friend that'll sit there and talk to them and be like, well, let's drink two bottles of wine and talk about how it is down here. Like,
instead of being truthful and saying you're in a crevice, you got to get out.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is, too, is that person you really got to have a lot of trust in.
Yeah.
You got to trust that that person is out for your best interest.
Yeah.
And these Sherpas are just the most humble and dedicated friend that you'll ever have on a mountain. Yeah. And I trusted them with my life, not just that one time, but several times during Everest climbs.
Yeah. I love that lesson. So then this next lesson, it came from his climb in Antarctica. Which mountain is it in Antarctica, Vincent?
Mount Vincent, yes.
Okay. So Mount Vincent, he talked about embracing the unknown and how negative 40 degrees sounds to a lot of people like straight up misery. But to my dad, he finds it exhilarating somehow. And it gives him like energy and makes him feel alive. Same with like sleeping outside on a mountain and rocks and ice. I just feel like you talk about that a lot, how, yeah, don't let people define your success. And that was actually probably one of the most talked about things that we talked about in the last one. But also, don't let people define pain for you, or don't let people define misery for you, and kind of how you can put your pain in perspective or your misery in perspective by really looking out and seeing it can always kind of be worse. You know, talk a little bit about that and talk about, like, you know, how did this lesson come up?
It was in the coldest place in the world. It was the trip across from Union Glacier to the summit of Mount Vincent. And it's the biggest danger on it was with the cold, the extreme cold. And you know, it I wrote don't. It was kind of the first post after I talked about happiness and Everest, about how mountain climbing made me happy, and I think it's and how not to defer happiness or not to let anybody define your happiness. It's the same thing with misery. You know, someone will say, "Well, 40 below zero, that sounds miserable." It does sound miserable. There's a lot of things in mountaineering that aren't comfortable. But don't let someone tell you that. There's a lot of things that I've done miserable that I just found exhilarating. 40 degrees below zero with the right equipment on, and to be able to survive, you know, weeks in that type of temperature was exhilarating. You know, I can go without food. I can go without a lot of things, and I draw energy from what I see, and it lifts me up to the point where it's hard to explain. And a lot of people sometimes want to focus on negative things, focus on the misery when there's so much beauty out there to look at.
Yeah.
And you know, if it's something like if you hit your finger and you think about it, you say, "My finger still hurts." There are other things, you know. Yeah. Someone said, "Well, slam your finger in the other finger in a drawer; it hurts worse, and you'll forget about the one that's hurting it." There's ways of masking the pain, the lack of sleep on a mountain, the things that are uncomfortable, to where it doesn't bother you.
Yeah.
And my lesson to my grandkid was, don't do something. Don't keep from doing something because someone told you it's miserable.
Yeah.
Go out there and experience it. Then if you go out there and say, 40 degrees was really bad, I don't want to ever do it again, then you've experienced it and you know. So
yeah.
I guess my lesson for happiness and for unhappiness is to define your own.
Yeah.
And define your own happiness, define your own misery too.
Yeah, and it reminds me of, you said a while ago that a lot of people, they want to stay in the misery. They want to talk more about the misery or the negative things that have happened to them. They almost wear it like a badge of honor. And while misery and pain, it teaches you so many things in life, you know, be able to move past that and like take the lessons that you've learned from it and move forward in your life also. I feel like you always say too that it's really easy to describe the bad things that happen to you while mountaineering. But it's really hard when people ask you about, like, the beauty of the mountains or the good things. It's like you almost can't put those things into words.
Yeah, it's hard to describe the walking out of Antarctica. You could see the curvature of the earth, and it was just everything was white, void of all bugs, life, anything but me and the two guys I was climbing with. And it's hard to describe something that just burned an indelible mark in your brain.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe that. And if you tell somebody you've been on a mountain for 2 months without a shower or without a toilet, they can say that's painful.
Yeah.
And it is, but some of the things that I've seen way outmask those painful things.
Yeah, and it's hard to describe those things. I feel like it reminds me sometimes of parenthood and like having a child, because everyone tends to tell you, oh, just get ready, or like, oh, you'll never go to a restaurant again, or you're never going to sleep again, or just wait till they're teenagers,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll hate you. And then I always heard that, like, before I became a parent. And whenever I first had Ford, I, like, started talking about what I called, like, positive parenting. I was like, why doesn't anyone really talk about the amazing, positive, happy moments? But I kind of get it now, because it's so much easier to describe. Lack of sleep, that's an easy thing to say. Or like how you can't go to a restaurant because they're screaming and they're throwing stuff on the floor. That's really easy, and it's very easy to articulate and talk about, and you can feel it when it comes back to you, what that exhaustion feels like. But like the moments of being a parent that are those amazing, magical moments, like the ones you were just talking about on mm-hmm. the top of a mountain. It's like, how do you put those into words? Like, it's very hard.
And it's hard for people to understand. It could be, you could be up all night long with Ford, and it's a five second smile in the morning when he wakes up that makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah.
And so it's the gratifying things are usually brief, and I talk about paying attention, because if you don't, you'll miss stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. If you're not like living in the moment, or if you're watching somebody else's lives, if you're looking on social media and living through someone else's like illusion of success, it reminds me a little bit of that too. How, you know, a lot of people are looking at a photograph of someone and they stamp that as happiness. Oh my gosh, I bet that person's so happy. They're on the Greek Isles, like on someone's boat. But how I've taken pictures, you know, way back when, or looked like I was really happy on the outside, and I really wasn't. It was really, there was a lot of pain. So it's easier to define misery. It's definitely harder to define those like shining, gleaming moments. But I think that's a good lesson in life, is that, you know, you might hear about a lot of people's pain or misery around a certain thing, but until you experience it yourself, you don't really know.
And the why and the how, too, that kind of ties back into that. You know, there have been people that think that climbing a mountain will make them happy, or doing a challenge, and that's part of the why. If you get to the top of the mountain and you say that's all there was, you didn't analyze the why, and you climbed it, you figured out how to do it, but the fact that you didn't know why you did it, you won't get true happiness. Yep. by not paying attention.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Okay, I know we are coming into back to school life for all of us with children out there, and I am all about something that makes your life easier, or your life as a parent easier, or helps kids get their vitamins or their nutrients easier. So let me tell you about something today called Little Critters. So it's back to school time, and this is one of my secrets for back to school. And between backpack browsing and outfit arranging, there is a drama-free way to make vitamins part of your kids' morning routines. And that is Little Critters Gummy Vitamins. So my kids think they're eating fun, delicious gummy bears, all while they're actually getting their essential nutrients for their health and development. I will never tell them that part. Little Critters is a pediatrician-recommended kids multivitamin gummy brand and a super yummy way to start the school year. So if you guys want to find an easier way to get kids their vitamins starting this school year, because we already have a million other things to worry about, shop now. If you've been wanting to learn a new language because you're traveling abroad and you want to experience that country beyond just the touristy spots, then Rosetta Stone is for you. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program available on most devices like your desktop, phone, or tablet. You can learn anywhere. Rosetta Stone teaches through immersion. Instead of memorizing and drilling vocabulary words, you learn by matching audio from native speakers to visuals, by reading stories, participating in dialogues, and other practical language skills to fast-track your ability to communicate fluently. There are no English translations in the product. You're getting trained to listen, speak, read, write, and think in your new language. They offer 25 languages, from Spanish to French to Italian, German, Chinese, Korean, Japanese, and even Dutch, Arabic, and Polish. Rosetta Stone has been around for 30 years and used by millions because it works. As you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words. It's also an amazing value. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, Living Fully podcast listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/ today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/ today. Okay, I know we are coming into back to school life for all of us with children out there, and I am all about something that makes your life easier, or your life as a parent easier, or helps kids get their vitamins or their nutrients easier. So let me tell you about something today called Little Critters. So it's back to school time, and this is one of my secrets for back to school. And between backpack browsing and outfit arranging, there is a drama-free way to make vitamins part of your kids' morning routines. And that is Little Critters Gummy Vitamins. So my kids think they're eating fun, delicious gummy bears, all while they're actually getting essential nutrients for their health and development. I will never tell them that part. Little Critters is a pediatrician-recommended kids multivitamin gummy brand and a super yummy way to start the school year. So if you guys want to find an easier way to get kids vitamins starting this school year, because we already have a million other things to worry about, shop now.
Okay, I really love this one. So this one, I believe, came from Everest also. Tell me if I'm wrong. It's where you say, I think it's a quote from somewhere, never be afraid to turn and run and live to fight another day. Think about the consequences, make your decision accordingly, and you will always have another day. Actually, I know it was from Everest because that was when you were 300 feet from the summit. The first time he climbed Mount Everest, he made it like 300 feet from the summit after climbing for months. And this is one of my favorite stories and one of my favorite lessons, because in the culture of like, do this and hustle. Hustle till you have something. Hustle till you achieve this. Sometimes the right answer is no. And sometimes the right decision is no. And how to logically quit or how to turn around, it's so hard. It's so humbling. But it's such an important lesson. One that might have saved your life.
Yeah.
On that mountain.
It was in the Kuma Valley. It was in Nepal, but it wasn't Everest. It was this last trip. It was climbing a mountain called Island Peak. And I've been rescued 4 times. I've had high altitude pulmonary edema. I had pneumonia. I had frozen larynx, where I had to be rescued and put in the hospital. I had an injured knee. So I've had points in time where I've been rescued and needed help. But this last one, where the quote from a Roman senator named Tacitus, and the quote goes, "He who fights and runs away will live and fight another day, but he who in battle is slain will never rise to fight again." And I wrote that after I got rescued this last time. I've had to turn around twice on these mountains, and I was able to get back, analyze what I did right and what I did wrong, and I was able to return and make it to the summit. And that was a quote. I'm not made it back to the top of Island Peak, but that was a quote that I wrote to tell you to know when to turn around, to know when you've had enough, and knowing that limit, knowing where you need to turn around, knowing what is important in that decision to turn around. In this case, it was pretty easy. It was my life was in danger, and I had to make that decision. The first time in Everest, there were people dying around me, and talked about the scars and injuries, the scars internally of seeing things like that were reasons to turn around. So it's a lesson. It was the very last lesson that I wrote on this last expedition about knowing your limits and knowing nobody's going to criticize you for saying, "I didn't make it. I turned around 300 yards from the top after 2 months in Everest." I said, there's no summit important enough for me to lose my life and not return home to my family. And a lot of that is knowing your limits, knowing when to turn and run.
Yeah. And it's really easy when it's life or death, like it was on these mountains. But it might be harder for somebody listening that's, in a relationship that's just like making them totally miserable. It's not the right thing, but they feel like, just like you, I've been on this mountain for so long, it's only 300 more yards. The rest of your life with someone or committing to someone in a relationship that isn't right, that's not a life or death thing, but in a way it is. Because
no, it's the same in business.
Yeah.
Knowing when, it's like playing cards, Texas Hold'em, wanting to go all in. Going all in's either you're going to lose everything or win everything. And there's, in relationships and your personal financial situation, those are bets that you don't ever want to take.
Yeah.
Mountaineering, you don't want to take, "I'm going to either live from this decision or die from this decision." Yeah. You want to make that decision and turn around way before you get there. Same thing with life and a lot of things, relationships. It's knowing that point.
Yeah. And knowing like the limits, the boundaries, whatever it is that you want to use that word to describe it. You can feel when it's time to get out of something. I hear from a lot of young people, too, that they say, I'm unhappy in this job, but I don't necessarily know what I want to do for the rest of my life. And they just stay in that job. And I feel like, in order for the right things to happen, sometimes you've really got to close the door to the wrong things. And you've got to logically quit. You've got to turn around and open up space for, in your case, you to climb another mountain. In somebody else's case, maybe another job opportunity or another relationship or whatever it is. But yeah, I feel like in today's day and age, everybody's just like, you can't quit. You've just got to hustle, 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 stay up all night, do this until you win. I don't necessarily think winning is always like completing the challenge.
No, you learn. You go, and sometimes you get your butt kicked.
Yeah.
You learn from it, and you come back, and you're successful the next time.
Yeah.
So it's not go until you win. It's sometimes it requires a retreat,
yeah.
rethink, and redecide how you're going to do it and get to the top the next
yeah.
time.
I think that's a great one. So lesson number 9 is the next one. We've got another point here from Everest and then one from Nepal we're going to close out with. Lesson number 9, it was from Mount Everest. And the first two people to climb Mount Everest were, what were their names? Hillary
Edmund
Lindsay.
Hillary and Tenzing Norrie.
I thought one of them's name was Mallory.
George Mallory he climbed from Tibet. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, leave your footprints where they'll last forever. You were talking about how, when the first person climbed Mount Everest, his footprints disappeared, in seconds, of course, because the snow and the wind and the ice. But how when he came down and he was the first person to complete this expedition, the things that he did with his legacy and with his life and with the charities and what his family did for other people, how those were the things that, really lasted. You talk a little bit about that, and I really like that lesson for a lot of different reasons. But, tell me a little bit about why you wrote that lesson.
Yeah, the story was, it was right before you push for the summit of Everest. You do what they call a drop back. So you've been your body weight's down 15-20%. At the time, I'd already lost probably 30 pounds. And you drop down to a lower altitude to recuperate for 5 days. And these 5 days, your Sherpa are putting the tanks up top and provisioning the summit for you to attack the summit. We dropped down to a little village called Namche. And at the top of that, there's 3 stupas that I climbed 2,000 meters to get to. 3,000 feet, I'm wrong, 1,000 meters. And the stupas were a testament to Edmund Hillary's family. I climbed with Adventure Consultants, which are New Zealanders, and Edmund Hillary's like George Washington to
yeah.
them. He's like the hero. And what happened is he received notoriety when he and Tenzing Norrie, his Sherpa, made it to the summit. And then after he did that, he and his wife and his daughter built a series of schools and hospitals that even today are still in existence in this very poor region of the Kumba Valley. And my point was, and the tragic part about it, his wife and his daughter, that monument was after a plane crash that killed both of them.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
And, and he struggled after that with living with that, and he eventually recovered from the loss. But it was those things, he's known in history for climbing Everest. But in that valley, the people that use those schools and hospitals, it's those things that made the real difference. And I guess my point in that lesson was be intentional. Do something that matters. Do something that will make a difference. I think I used an example of this weekend. I sat and watched Game of Thrones and binge-watched it for a few sessions. And and then me and Kyle ran a triathlon. And I said, that triathlon was something that was worth doing something.
Yeah.
instead of me benching out on the Game of Thrones. So my lesson to that is do something that has purpose and do something that will make a difference. And I guess it's maybe I'm 60 now, and what I look at when I do things, I do things that will intentionally make a difference and do things that will benefit other people. And I look at that.
Yeah. And that leads to this another point about you wrote, be humble. Once you've achieved a lot of really huge things in your life and that a lot of people would, they'd hang their hat on. But you talk a lot about how even after having climbed the highest point in the world, you still have problems telling people, I climbed Mount Everest. And I want you to talk a little bit about that before we do this last lesson, because it's so interesting, because I feel like so many people, especially once they've succeeded at something that was something as big as climbing Mount Everest, they really have, they love to hang their hat on that. And they use that as a title to define themselves or to introduce themselves to someone, or, they just want to talk about how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just talk about how you really have trouble saying that you did it.
Yeah. Well, there's two things. One is a mountain is the most humbling experience in the world. It can, you know, emotionally, I've cried like a baby every time I reach to the top of one. The power and the energy that is generated from a mountain is just humbling. When you stand at the bottom of it and look to the top and say, how in the world will I ever get up there? It just humbles you, you know, to be, you know, part of something and to be able to experience something like that. And then the problem I have is not as much saying I made it to the top of that mountain. It's the I in that, because I could not have made it to the top of Mount Everest without a team of people around me, without Sherpa carrying my oxygen bottles and staging them at the balcony and at the South Summit, where when I got up there, I was able to get a fresh bottle of oxygen, or fixing ropes across the Hillary Steps. You know, and the leadership that I had with the adventure consultant guys, Lydia Brady, the first lady to climb without oxygen, and Guy Cotter, the guy who was the owner of the company, and their leadership. You know, I feel guilty when I say I climbed Mount Everest. Yes, I did climb Mount Everest, but without that team of people around me, and for me to say that without acknowledging that it was because I had help that I was able to make it to the top. I think that's in life, in business, I have the same problem. I still work for a very successful company that I started with my brothers, and the employees that I have, you know, my family that supported me being gone while I was working for this, those are the things that you can't forget to throw in to the fact that I built a successful company. I did an amazing thing. I was Miss Kentucky and runner-up in Miss America. You know, those are things that are important milestones in your life, but the fact that you had help getting there is something that you always got to remember.
Yeah.
And you know, it also helps that person that helped you get to that point, the fact that you acknowledge and were grateful for their help. If you ever need them again,
yeah.
If you ever need that help again, they're always going to be there. Where if I say, I climbed it, I did this, I did that, they're not going to do that. They'll say, heck with you. I'm not going to help you anymore because you took all the credit and I carried your oxygen bottles to the top of that daggone mountain.
Yeah.
So the fact that I'm grateful for the help that I got also reassures that those people will help me again if I ever need it.
Yeah. I've been saying that a lot just in the last month. This podcast has only been out for a month, but people tell me all the time how they really love it. And, you know, this thing changed their perspective on this or just has helped them so much. And I'm like, this podcast and like what I'm doing on this platform or any platform, it's all the people that listen to it. Cause I'd just be talking into thin air if there wasn't this huge community around it. I didn't get to be the second podcast in the whole world on launch day. It's the people listening to it that got me to there. And I think that's so important. And I love that lesson. And it reminds me of what Pawpaw says. My dad's dad, we call him Pawpaw. We grew up on a farm in Kentucky and he was in the middle and like all my dad's siblings were around, all my cousins, like we grew up on this awesome farm. And he always would say like, don't step on people while you're climbing the ladder because you never know who you're going to meet when you're coming back down. Because you really never know, you know, maybe you keep climbing your whole life, but maybe you don't. I mean, shoot, I've fallen so many times, I feel like, at a young age. And I think that's an awesome lesson and one that you certainly embody and exemplify every day.
And the importance of gratitude. I've heard you talk of being grateful to the people who listen that make you successful. And I think that it's a gift that you give other people, and it's free. It doesn't cost you anything to say you're successful because of someone else. And I think that that's something that you need to pay back, and they do that in gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah, gratitude's one of those like free passes that like will change your life. Everybody's always like, oh, gratitude. But it is so true. Like when you practice gratitude more, how it really is transformative and just opens the door to more success. Yeah. So lastly, I want to get to this last lesson because it's, I think, the only one that we've talked about from, actually, no, we talked about one more from Nepal. But I love this one from Nepal, and I want you to tell the story behind the photograph that you were just telling me about, that this came from. But you said the lesson was balance where you came from to where you're going. And I really love that for so many different reasons. But I want you to talk a little bit about that before we talk about it.
Well, it was, you were talking about balance and what created that lesson. It was packing for my last trip to Nepal. And what I do is, it's a deliberate process. I put everything on a ping pong table in my basement. And then I pack it in bags. And then I think about it. I got to carry all this stuff for the next 2 months. And then I unpack it back to the ping pong table. And if there's something that I can absolutely live without, I get it and I'll cast it aside. And the balance came from, I looked at the stuff that I cast to the floor, and there was a pair of old boots that had made it to the top of several mountains. And they were faded, had holes in them. The soles weren't real good. And, you know, I need to carry those boots because they got me to the top of a lot of mountains. And I said, that's kind of the parallel to life is balance where you came from with where you're going. And I was sentimental. I didn't carry the old boots. I carried the new ones because I didn't want to lose any toes. And the new ones had better tread, no holes in them. So I chose to go with the new. But my message, I think about before you cast something out, that I said it or they have got you to the top of a lot of mountains.
Yeah.
And be loyal and be sentimental about a relationship that got you there, or a piece of equipment that had value. But also don't be afraid to, once you've evaluated the balance of the sentimental value, don't be afraid to make that change.
Yeah. And I think too, like, how bad would it have been if you would have just drug those shoes up the mountain with you that you couldn't use on that next journey? How much weight that would have added to your journey if you would have carried that baggage that you didn't really need.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people do that in life. I've done that before. You just carry the baggage of something that happened in a relationship, or something that happened with your boss at work, or, you know, some sort of failure that you made in school or in, you know, parenting, in so many different things. You can learn from that thing. You can be sentimental about the negative or the positive that it brought into your life. And then you can find the tool or the equipment that serves you best for the remainder of your journey, instead of dragging that with you the whole time.
It's funny, the analysis that mountains and things that I've learned and how they'll plug into something else in life that you just mentioned.
Yeah. So yeah, I agree. It's just like you said, balance where you came from to where you're going. There's so much that you can learn from your past, but you can also hang on to your past and you can live in the past, and it prevents you from moving forward. So I think it's, balance is the exact right word. That's what you said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, balance it. You've climbed a heck of a lot of mountains and a lot of continents all around the world, and every mountain's different from what it sounds like. I've never been on any of these mountains, but Kilimanjaro is a heck of a lot different than Vincent. It's a heck of a lot different than Aconcagua and Everest, and they're all kind of totally different journeys. And it's like, if you applied the exact same skills and brought the same equipment to each of the mountains, you wouldn't be equipped for that journey.
Right.
So I think that if people in their lives, if you're bringing the same set of tools to how you manage your office, to how you manage your household and deal with your children, it's probably not going to work. Or if you try and speak to your spouse or treat your spouse like you do a coworker, it's not going to work. Or, you know, so many things in life. I think I do that sometimes. You forget. You forget to separate things, the differences in this mountain to that mountain, the differences in so many different hats that we wear in life. You really need different tools and different, sometimes you toss out the old tools and you need to assess, you know, what's working talking to this child, or what's working in my job and what's not. And I think that that's a valuable lesson just in life in general. and in climbing all the mountains that we climb in life. What's harder, climbing like life's metaphorical mountains or real mountains?
I don't know. Life is as unpredictable as a mountain and the weather. Yeah. And you know, there's things that you can't predict or cause. People and relationships are complicated in business. There's always things that are outside of your control that can happen. And it's those uncontrollable things that are the tricky ones. Yeah. that make it interesting.
Yeah. It's awesome. Well, one thing I can control is who I put on the other mic with me on these podcasts. And I'm just super glad that I have someone, not only that like I know, but that raised me, that you guys have really connected to the advice from, and you guys have really taken to heart a lot of these life lessons. And, you know, the whole title of this podcast and the reason that I started it and my brand, Living Fully, was truly to, you know, give tools and tips and tricks and speak with people who truly are like living their lives fully. And what I really love about my dad and all of his journeys is how he balances out, you know, the good things with the bad things, the hard things with the easy things, the successes with the failures. And I think that these lessons from these mountains are just a continuation upon that first one that we did that people love so much. So I appreciate you guys listening so much to this. And thanks so much, Dad, for coming on. And you guys can go to GaryClimbsMountains.com if you guys want to see these lessons in their entirety. And he's got some really cool pictures and video and all of these lessons in that. And I'm going to leave it in the show notes. But thanks so much, Dad, for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me back. And maybe a couple into next month, I'll be back with another story from my experience in Indonesia.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us on Living Fully with Mallory Irvin. And remember to subscribe so you don't miss a single minute of encouragement and inspiration to live your best life. Want more? Join us on MalloryIrvin.com so we can connect with you on Instagram and YouTube. Start living your life now. You've only got one. We'll see you next time.